Chapter 34. Owen. We flee with the remaining defenders into the stairwell, barring the doors behind us to keep the attackers at bay. Panicked and discouraged, we fly down the steps, entering the twisted maze of tunnel-like hallways beneath the fortress. Elias takes command, marshaling the quailing nightingales with his usual blunt demeanor.
"Station guards at all choke points," he says, barking the order to a nearby group of officers. "Make sure we force them into as many bottlenecks as possible. They have the numbers, but we know this castle. Numbers won't count for anything if we can keep them confined to certain areas."
He continues rattling off commands to the men around him, most of whom are all too happy to comply. I, on the other hand, make my way farther down the darkened hall with Talon on my heels.
"Owen, where are you going?"
he asks, voice frantic.
"Zara,"
I reply without looking back, "I need to find a way to sneak her out of the castle."
"We need you here,"
he protests, grabbing my shoulder and forcing me to stop. "These nightingales can't fight half as well as you can, and if this area falls, the rest of the castle will too." I turn to look at him, my eyes pleading.
"She needs me, Talon."
"I know she does, mate,"
he replies, voice softening, "but the best way for you to help her is to make sure those wily bastards don't get past these choke points." A pair of nightingales limps past us, one supporting the other, who looks badly wounded. Grimacing, I give him a single curt nod. "He's right," I think reluctantly. "We can't let this area fall, or it's all over." Making our way back to Elias, we stop to ask where we can be of most use. He turns, his expression as stoic as ever.
"Protector Thel and General Boris have both survived, thank the light. The Protector is injured, but not fatally. They're preparing to sue one final time for peace. Surrender is preferable to wholesale slaughter."
"Do you think that General Moore will listen?"
He sets his jaw grimly.
"No," he replies, shaking his head. "I don't. That's why we have to hold this area. We need to make it so painful for them to take the rest of the fortress that they'll be forced to give up. It's our only chance."
"All right," I say, gripping the handle of my hatchet. "Where do you want us?"
He considers for a moment, and I can hear clamoring in the stairwell nearby. The enemy has broken through our barricades. They'll be upon us soon.
"We need to make sure that the main gate doesn't fall," he replies, nodding down a particular hallway. "We may have lost the walls, but we still have the gatehouse. Guard it with your life. Make sure the enemy is confined to these choke points only."
I nod, and together Talon and I make our way to the gatehouse, passing groups of Nightingale soldiers on the way. The atmosphere is grave within the citadel, and more than half of the troops we pass carry a wound of some kind.
"They've fought hard," I think to myself. "Light, pray that they can fight a little longer."
Finally, we arrive at the main entrance of the citadel, just beneath the gatehouse and behind the portcullis. The gates, of course, are locked and barred, flanked by a stairwell on either side. A contingent of perhaps 20 warriors stands in the main hall, nervously clutching their weapons. When Talon and I approach, our bloodied and tattered ranger cloaks trailing behind us, they look to us uncertainly as if wondering what to do next.
"How does this always fall on us?"
Talon mutters to me as we step up to the gathered troops. He clears his throat and turns to face them.
"All right, you lot. Our job is simple. Keep those red-colored scoundrels from opening up these doors. We need to hold this chamber indefinitely. So also keep an eye on those stairwells. If anyone comes through that isn't wearing one of your gloomy dark cloaks, kill 'em. Got it?"
The soldiers glance at each other dubiously and then nod, not looking particularly inspired.
"How'd I do?"
Talon asks, giving one of his short swords a twirl.
"Well enough, I guess."
He shrugs.
"I'm not one for fancy speeches. Get them to do their job and that's good enough. That's what I say."
He pauses for a moment, staring at the gate, and then sighs.
"I really wish I had some ale."
I can't help but smile. "I think you may have a problem, Tal." He grins.
"It's only a problem if it causes you trouble. Me? Ale actually sharpens my wits."
Someone walks into the room behind us, speaking in a disapproving tone.
"A sorry excuse for a defense, indeed."
Everyone turns to see an elderly woman making her way toward the gates. Her bent figure moves with a surprising nimbleness for someone her age.
The rebels all seem awed by her presence, some of them even bowing before her in deference. Talon leans over and whispers in a not-so-quiet voice, "Who's the old lady?"
"This old lady," she replies, giving him a pointed look, "is the best chance you have at surviving here, boy. Now, keep quiet and let the adults take care of things."
She produces a small blue source crystal from the folds of her dark robes and immediately begins conferring with some of the nightingales. That must be Edna, I think, remembering the Cabal mage woman Zara had told me about. She doesn't look very impressive to me.
"She's a grumpy old hag," Talon says, much quieter this time. "Those kingsmen are in for it now. She's like to scold them to death."
I give him a half shrug. "She's a mage. I'm just glad she's on our side." Shouts suddenly echo from the stairwells, cutting our banter short. Footsteps thunder from above, accompanied by the jangle of armor. From the proximity of the clamor, the enemy has begun to storm the gatehouse. A few seconds later, the doors to both stairwells burst open, and enemy soldiers charge through, yelling wordlessly with weapons raised. Edna immediately casts a spell at the king's men on the right, blasting them with mage fire and sealing off the first portal. The nightingales turn to dispatch the other group to the left, gathering around the second archway to prevent any more from pouring through. Weapons flash and men curse, blood spilling onto the stone floor as bodies fall with muted thuds.
"We can't afford to lose any men," I murmur, watching the rebels struggle near the leftmost stairwell.
Backing away, I jog over to a nearby wall display and begin pulling down spears and decorative shields emblazoned with the nightingale sigil. Talon, noticing my actions, comes over and helps me, carrying the items to the men standing near the front. Shields in hand, they begin setting up a barricade, spears and blades pointing into the stairwell, which is already beginning to clog with corpses. On the other side, Edna seems to be doing well. Her eyes are closed, and she has completely blocked off the doorway with magic, preventing any men from getting through. Even so, I know she can't hold her spell forever. Eventually, she'll tire and be forced to stop.
"These sods are persistent," Talon observes, watching as more of the king's men throw themselves at the wall of shields.
"They seem more afraid of General Moore than our blades," I agree. An opening presents itself in their advance, and I jump forward, lashing out with my hatchet at a soldier trying to push his way past the perimeter. His skull splits open, and he hits the ground hard, his wound spraying my front with gore. We manage to hold our ground for a time, our defenders blocking the stairway and only allowing the attackers through two or three at a time. This gives us the opportunity to quickly cut them down, the bottleneck proving effective. The sounds of fighting echo in from the other halls of the citadel, indicating various points the king's army is attempting to infiltrate. Dodging a blow, I concentrate on doing what I can to hold our position. With any luck, the other pockets of resistance will be able to do so as well. Just then, I feel a strange heat radiating from the main gatehouse entrance. It feels like I'm standing beside a bonfire, the skin on the side of my face prickling with tiny beads of sweat. I turn to regard the large iron-banded double doors and find that the metal on them is glowing, like a sword being forged in the coals of an intense furnace. "Talon," I say, dread settling in the pit of my stomach, "I think the stairwells were just a distraction." He follows my gaze and curses, backing away from the line of nightingales and falling into a fighting stance.
"Hey, gents," he calls, grabbing the attention of several of the defenders, "I think we're about to have some company."
This seems to get Edna's attention as well, who mutters something that sounds like a curse under her breath.
"Well, don't just stand there," she snaps. "Some of you come over and help me."
Several rebels break away from the main group and rush over to the mage's side, taking up defensive positions just behind her radiant shield. When she releases the spell, they lock their own shields together and strive to hold back the soldiers waiting on the other side. Looking even more aged than she had before, she shuffles over to the gate and takes a deep breath, her crystal held before her in both of her withered hands. The metal on the doors begins to melt like wax, the thick wood smoldering and even charring in places. Whatever's on the other side is burning through them at an alarming rate. When they go down, the gatehouse will be impossible to hold.
"Fall back!"
I cry out as even more of the king's soldiers spill out of the now meagerly guarded stairwells. Our defense, once so solid, devolves into an unsure scramble, the rebels staring at the doors in horror as they fend off the stream of enemy combatants. The charred wood of the gatehouse doors crumbles, black chunks sloughing to the ground as gouts of blue flames spurt through the cracks. Mage fire. In a matter of seconds, the right door disintegrates, revealing a man in blue robes standing with his hands outstretched on the other side. He has a pointy black beard and angular features, and flames emanate from his hands like flickering blue tendrils of energy. As soon as the way is clear, he steps back, lowering his hands and extinguishing the mage fire. A nimbus of light begins to radiate around Edna as she immediately casts a spell, her hands held out as if trying to push something very heavy. The mage on the other side of the door gasps as fire lances from her palms, shooting toward him with incredible speed. Raising his own hands, he manages to deflect the attack by conjuring a shield, the impact creating a blinding display of sparks. The embroiled soldiers momentarily cease fighting as everyone watches the exchange with awe. Edna continues to sling spell after spell at the man, her missiles kicking up clouds of dust and debris as they explode all around him. For an instant, I'm sure that he must be dead, the assault so overwhelming that it seems to electrify the very air. When the smoke clears, however, the mage steps through the rubble unharmed, his shocked expression now replaced by an enraged snarl. He holds one hand out, the other clutching his talisman, and utters the words of a spell that encircles him with an aura of raw power. Bolts of light erupt from his fingertips, arcing through the air like a flurry of arrows, leaving Edna with barely enough time to summon a shield of her own. The explosion seems to shake the citadel's foundation stones, and I watch in horrified fascination as her feet slide across the floor with each blow, the force of the impacts pushing her backward. "Light, we need to help her," I think, making as if to charge the furious mage, but the heat emanating from his spellcasting is enough to hold me back from attacking. Without magical protection, I would surely be burned to cinders. Edna struggles to return his bombardment with mage fire, but she appears greatly weakened. Even from a distance, I can see that her limbs are shaking like she might collapse from strain at any moment. Finally, after several long minutes of unyielding blows, her radiant shield sputters out, and a single glowing projectile strikes home. Her head smacks the stone as she falls, but the blackened scar in the middle of her chest suggests she was gone before she even hit the ground. Panting heavily, the traitorous mage steps through the opening, warily eyeing Edna's smoking corpse. Oddly enough, he appears regretful as he moves to the side, his anger all but evaporated now that his foe was defeated. His eyes even look haunted as a stream of soldiers rushes past him and into the unprotected gatehouse. I don't have time to wonder at the magical duel, as I'm immediately forced to defend myself. Our smattering of defenders, taken completely by surprise from the pyrotechnics and sudden opening of the gatehouse, stagger backward into a haphazard retreat. To my left, Talon pivots, opening the belly of one of his attackers and burying his blades into the chest of another. A man with a blonde beard slashes at me, and I duck to avoid decapitation. Moving quickly, I hook the head of my hatchet around his ankle and trip him, then bring it down onto his face while he's flat on his back. The fighting becomes frenzied, and we're forced to give up more ground. As we fall away from the gatehouse inch by inch, I spare one last glance at the rebel mage who gave her life protecting us. When Zara wakes up, she must know about her. I will not let her sacrifice be forgotten. We are pressed backwards into the narrow halls, battling for our lives. Some rebels throw down their weapons and surrender, pleading for the invaders to show mercy, but it's of no use. The soldiers ruthlessly butcher them, cutting them down where they stand. They've won, I think in despair, watching as a nightingale next to me gets impaled by an enemy sword. They've bested every single one of our defenses. What more could we have done to stop them? We mix with other embattled groups of defenders, the labyrinth beneath the citadel becoming a blood-soaked melee. As I struggle, breaking away from the conflict for a brief moment, I find my thoughts suddenly consumed by Zara. I have to help her. I have to get her out of here. She'll die without me there to protect her. I begin fighting my way deeper into the fortress, Talon following wordlessly as we carve out a path to the medical wing. Even he seems to realize the hopelessness of our situation. Together we let our rangers' training carry us through. The area of the castle containing the wounded and dying is located in one of the tallest towers of the citadel, above a section of winding staircases and confusing corridors. Fortunately, the farther Talon and I move from the chaos near the gatehouse, the less crowded it becomes. Corpses still litter the ground, and groups of bloodied soldiers wander around in panicked bunches, but for the most part, the way is clear, allowing us to make good progress.
I'll need Tal's help carrying her, I think determinedly. The focus is on the gatehouse. If we can get her through one of the holes in the wall, then perhaps we can sneak through the city and out into the mountains. It's a vain hope, but I cling to it tenaciously, unwilling to consider the alternative.
Just before we reach the hospital wing, we're forced to stop by a commotion at a junction in the corridor in front of us. A man with jet-black hair and a crisp uniform leads a handful of soldiers in red down the hall, a gleaming sword held in his hand, and a self-confident smile on his face. They engage a group of nightingales, rapidly dispatching them in an efficient and brutal fashion. I watch in horror as the black-haired man swings his blade at one of the rebels, his quick movements reminding me of a striking serpent. The blade passes through the man's neck, severing his head and sending it tumbling to the ground, the rest of his body spurting blood across the stones as it falls. The man looks up, making eye contact with me, then grins wickedly, his eyes flashing with recognition.
11 hells, Talon curses, pointing. Is that Rollo's?
Rollo's expertly flicks the blood from his sword, striding forward and leading his half-dozen soldiers toward our position. Their booted footfalls are thunderous in the narrow confines of the hallway. Talon and I immediately go on the defense, taking up positions beside each other to prevent either of us from getting flanked. Just before reaching us, Rollo's stops and waves the other soldiers back.
These two are mine, he says confidently, turning to stare at us each in turn. I've been looking everywhere for you apprentices. How good of you to come to me.
He advances, his sword point leading the way. We're both taken off guard as Rollo's immediately jumps to the offensive, lashing out with his sword and engaging the two of us simultaneously.
Light, he's good, I think,
narrowly avoiding a strike to my shoulder. His blade sings through the air so quickly that I barely have enough time to block him, his movements an almost imperceptible blur. He lunges at me and then Talon, putting us on our heels and pressing us back with more skill than I've ever seen before. By comparison, my own movements feel sluggish and clumsy. I manage to deflect his blade with my hatchet, but I don't even have enough time to consider striking at an opening. Talon seems to fare just as poorly, his twin short swords clinking against Rollo's blade in rapid succession, his eyes wide with surprise. His soldiers laugh and jeer at us down the hall, calling out insults as Rollo's alternates attacks between the two of us. Finally, in the fraction of a second after his blade passes by, I see an opening. I come in with my hatchet at a sideways overhand chop. For a moment, it seems like I'm actually going to score a hit, but Rollo's twists his body, and the hatchet barely misses, connecting only with open air. The wind is blasted out of my lungs a second later as he strikes me in the gut with his elbow, and then his shoulder connects with my jaw, sending me tumbling backward to slam into the wall. I wheeze and try to scramble to my feet, his complete attention now focused on Talon. I can see fear in my fellow apprentice's eyes, his movements unsure as he tries to defend himself. My hatchet, which fell to the floor from my nerveless fingers, lies several feet away. Sucking in a haggard breath, I stagger over and pick it up, feeling the familiar weight in my hand. Steel crashes against steel as the two duel in the darkened hallway, Talon working his swords furiously to avoid being cut down. Rollo's, on the other hand, makes it appear easy, his movements sure and confident as he pushes Talon harder and harder, waiting for him to make a mistake. I move forward, determined to get back into the fight, but the two have already moved too far down the hall. My steps feel too slow, my legs too weak as I close the distance, my abdomen still throbbing where he'd struck me. I'm about to reach them when, swinging effortlessly, Rollo's knocks one of the short swords out of Talon's hand. He follows this up by locking blades with him, then guiding the edge down the length of Talon's other sword. The weapon doesn't have a crossguard, and when Rollo's reaches the hilt, he pushes it home, severing the apprentice's arm just beneath the elbow.
No!
I scream, throwing myself at the treacherous man. Talon falls to his knees, clutching his bloody stump while his hand lands off to the side. He doesn't scream, merely stares at the grisly wound with a look of stunned disbelief. Rollo's turns his attention back to me, the edge of his sword dripping with my friend's blood. He blocks my clumsy attack and pushes me away, allowing me enough time to recover and face him once more. "You have heart, apprentice," he says, eyes burning with the light of a nearby torch. "I always admired that about you, even from the beginning. But unfortunately, you chose the wrong side."
He springs into action, wielding his sword in a mesmerizing, deadly display. I hold my own for a few moments, blocking his relentless attacks, but he eventually pushes me back against the wall, leaving me no more space to move. He strikes high, then unexpectedly reverses and comes in low, the feint catching me off guard. My leg sears with pain as he scores a hit on my thigh, and a second later my hatchet is once again out of my hand, knocked to the side by an almost casual blow. My immediate instinct is to sink to the floor, to clutch my wounded leg and accept my inevitable death. But I resist the cowardly urge. "I'm going to die standing," I tell myself, setting my jaw against the pain. "That's the way a true ranger should go." Rollo's smirks at me.
"Brave, foolish boy," he says, then winds up to deliver a fatal blow.
I brace myself for what's to come, heart pounding, but I suddenly blink as an arrow unexpectedly strikes Rollo's in the arm. He staggers backward, looking at the shaft in shock, then stares angrily down the hall. Following his gaze, I find Elias, drawing another arrow, his iron eyes glinting with a dangerous light.
"Step away from my apprentice, you bastard."
He stands tall over the bodies of the soldiers who'd come with Rollo's, having dispatched them during our fight. He shoots again, aiming for Rollo's heart, but the black-haired man manages to somehow block the missile with a deft movement of his sword. Elias throws down his bow and pulls out his belt knife, advancing carefully toward our position. He moves with a slight limp, and I can see from a wet spot on his cloak that he has taken a wound in his side. Ignoring the arrow protruding from his shoulder, Rollo's growls and rushes forward to meet Elias, his sword held out before him. Blades ring out in the hall as they clash, beginning a deadly dance that is sure to leave one or both of them dead. As much as I want to run to my master's aid, Talon's injury is more urgent. Momentarily forgetting Rollo's and Elias, I race to his side, falling to my knees next to him, and immediately removing my belt.
"Won't get many ladies with one hand," he says through gritted teeth.
There's already a pool of blood on the floor, his stump dripping profusely. It was a clean cut, but I can still see bone through the mess of red tissue.
"What are you talking about?" I reply, forcing a small smile. "Girls love battle scars. This just makes you look tough."
He whimpers as I loop my belt around his forearm, cinching it tight against his skin to stop the bleeding. The makeshift tourniquet should do its job for now, but he'll need to see the surgeon soon. Tearing off the edge of my cloak, I wrap it around the stump to help further staunch the blood flow. Rollo's and Elias continue to fight with a fierce intensity. The two appear evenly matched, but as I watch them, I can see that Elias's hurt side is slowing him down. The arrow in Rollo's arm, however, doesn't seem to faze him. I pick up my hatchet and move to help, just as the knight stabs the tip of his sword into Elias's other side. The blade bites deep, and my master lets out a gasp of pain. He manages to shove Rollo's away, but the damage has been done. At this point, Elias is having trouble even remaining on his feet. Grinning widely in victory, Rollo's brings up his sword for another blow, this time intending to kill Elias before he can recover.
Hells, I'll never make it to him in time.
I make a split-second decision to throw my father's hatchet, raising it high with both hands. Letting out a throat-rending scream, I hurl it with everything I have, releasing the handle just as my wounded leg gives out. It spins end over end, closing the distance between us with incredible speed and hitting its mark before Rollo's can deliver his killing blow. With a sickening crunch, the weapon buries itself into the man's skull, snapping his neck violently to the side from the force of the impact. His sword, red with blood, clangs to the ground at the same time his body collapses.
Then all goes still.
Elias slumps heavily against the wall, his face pale and sweaty. After a moment, he shuffles toward me, his hand pressed against his newly injured side.
"Thanks for that," he says stiffly. "You saved my life."
I push myself to my feet with some difficulty and reply,
"You did the same for me, Master."
The corner of his mouth turns up, and it seems like a glimmer of light enters his countenance. The echoes of war still reach our ears from within the citadel, but for an instant there is peace and mutual respect felt between us.
I'd hate to interrupt this touching moment, Talon says weakly from his spot on the floor. But if you don't mind, I'd like to get to the hospital wing now. I'd prefer not to bleed out in this bloody dark tunnel.